And so the Dharma talk that I'm giving today is the Dzogchen Shugye Pakpa's, who went to China and Mongolia. In fact, he is the one of the pioneer persons to spread the Buddha Dharma, especially the Vajrayana teachings, to the China and in Mongolia. And so this, it is known as the advice to the prince of the Mongol emperor, Prince Chivik Dimur. His personal name is Chivik Dimur. And name of the book is called Jewel Garland. Jewel Garland. And this, I feel this is very important because it has three chapters. And the first chapter is all about how to live worldly life according to the Dharma ways. And majority of us are still in the worldly level. Majority are still, we are living in the world. And everyone, of course, wanted to be their life, good life in the sense that oneself happy and also make others happy and to create the happy atmosphere. But it is difficult, so therefore we need the teachings. So he gave the teachings. So the first chapter is all about a worldly life, how to live a worldly life according to the Dharma ways. And this is very important for everybody because I feel to become a good spiritual practitioner, first you have to become a good person. Without being a good person, you cannot become a good spiritual practitioner. So first of all, whichever religion you follow, first I think you have to make a good person. Good person in the sense that healthy life and also very healthy mind, so that one can live long and one can think clearly and one can make oneself peace and happiness and also make peace and happiness to the others. On the basis of that, then you can choose what religion, what spiritual practice that one need to choose. I myself believe that every religion, there are many religions in the world, and every major religion has its own way, has its own beauty to help the mankind. And it is necessary to have a variety of spiritual traditions because there's not one medicine that cures every disease. In order to cure different diseases, you need different medicines. So therefore, the variety of spiritual practice is very important. For some people, Buddhism is very suitable. For some people, Christianity is more suitable. For some people, Hinduism is more suitable. For some people, Islam is more suitable. So therefore, but to become whatever religious or spiritual practice you follow, first you have to become a good person. So to become a good person, how we should do it? And is that, for that, the first chapter is all about worldly life, how to live a worldly life according to the Dharma ways. And that has nine parts. And number one is that when you have wealth, and when you have power, and when you have the education, and when you have strength, then people tended to have arrogance, people tended to have proud. So this, he said, one should never have a proud, because everything is impermanent. There's no point to being proud, because whatever glorious position that you have is not permanent. Everything is impermanent. As Buddha said, that all compound things are impermanent. And the impermanent in the sense that all compound things are with the four endings. Four endings means that end of gathering is separation. Wherever we gather, we don't remain for forever, but we all end of gathering is separation. And then end of accumulation is exhaustion. No matter how much you accumulate, it does not remain, but it exhausts, at the end it exhausts. And the end of height is to fall down. No matter how high you reach, eventually the birds, how high the birds fly, eventually have to land on the ground. So similarly, how high your position, your power that you reach in the whatever height you reach, eventually that you have to fall down. And the end of birth is death. So therefore, there's no point being arrogant. Even the things that which we presume are very stable and vast, such as like the ocean, sun, moon, or Mount Sumeru, etc., are also one day, even though they are very huge and they are very vast, but one day they will be disappear. As we see the mountains and so on, there are huge mountains also disappears eventually after thousands, millions of years. So our body, which is very fragile and easy to lose, is just like water bubbles. The water bubbles are immediately burst. The bubbles create and then immediately they burst into the good. And so therefore, there's no point in being arrogant. And then second is, when you lost everything, when you lost your wealth, when you lost your power, then you become very timid. You think that now I can't do anything. Now I am the worst. One get very down and kind of depressed. That also wrong, he said. There are many worse states. For example, the hell realms, the hungry ghost realms, animals realms, even among the human beings, compare with us, they are much worse states. So compared to them, that we are much better off. So therefore, one should not be timid also. One have to follow the middle path. And one should not be arrogant. At the same time, one should not be timid. So second is, one should not be timid. Third one is that one must pay back the kindness. Our present body, for example, is came from our parents. Without caring, the care and love given by the parents, that we could not be survive. So therefore, we survive today as a human being is due to the kindness of our parents. And today that we are educated, we can read, write, and think, and go, and as a human being, is due to the teachers and masters. So therefore, we must remember their kindness, and we must try to pay back their kindness. That is the third one. Fourth one is that we must respect. Olden times, of course, every country, is ruled by the rule, the kings and queens and so on. So the, in other words, the leaders, due to their skill, due to their activities, that the country is being able to carry on. So therefore, one must respect the rulers or the leaders. And then the fifth one is to look after the poor ones. Those who are, the fifth one is the poor ones. The poor in the sense those who are desperate, who are destitute, and then also to who are sick, who are powerless, who cannot look after themselves, who are very poor state, that we must think and try to help whatever that one can. And then sixth one is, because this teaching is given to the prince who is ruling the country. So the kingdom, the larger the kingdom, the greater the kingdom it is. So therefore, to conquer the other parts, for example, olden times, they are known as the universal emperors. The universal emperors also have like the gold emperors, silver emperors, copper emperors, and metal emperors, depending on how large the kingdom is. So therefore, through the skillful means to expand the subject or the land. And then the seventh is to rule the country according to Dharma. And this, he said, this has actually many different parts, but it has also about the laws. He said that there's no one who is all qualities, and there's no one who is all faults also. Even the man who has lots of faults also has some part of quality. Even the one who has a lot of qualities also has some fault. So we must examine whether which is more. If the man has more qualities, less faults, then that is a good person. If he has less qualities and more faults, and that is something to be abandoned. And then also, as a ruler, as a king, or the ruler of the country, you have to look after all the citizens equally, everybody. And there are many different kinds of people. Some are good people, some are bad people. And so the good people who follow the rules of the country, who do good works for the country, for them that we must give them rewards according to their own according to their works. If they have done a lot, then you have to give greater award. if it is a medium, if it is a small. And then there are also bad people who do not follow the rules of the country, who disturbs the country, so they have to be punished. The punishment also, he has actually very good advice. He said, when you give the punishment, you should not give the punishment out of anger or out of hatred, but out of a good heart. For example, when the sick people are given injections and also operations, when you do the operations or the injections, we are not giving these injections just to hurt the patients. We are giving the injections to hoping that this injection will cure the disease of the patients. Similarly, the operation is done to cure the patient's disease, not to hurt the patients. So similarly, the bad people should get the punishment, but not out of anger, but out of intention of helping the person by giving this punishment, such as scolding or charging them or whatever punishment you give them. It is not to hurt or not to hurt or not to create pain or suffering, but to hoping that by giving this punishment, the person will become a better person. So that he will become a good person again by giving this punishment, and so that he will then follow the right path and do the right things. And he is totally against giving the capital punishment. He gave the example also, say that if you have a dirty cloth, by saying this is a dirty cloth, and if you burn it, then you could never use it, because you already burned. But if the dirty cloth is washed, then again you can use it. And you can use for many useful things. Similarly, but this man is a bad person, so if you kill him, then he's finished. But if you give him treatment, if you give him punishment and give him some advice and so on, so that he can also become a good person. For example, ancient times, Angulimala or Achatashutra, etc., who actually have a very heavy, who committed very heavy negative karmas, but due to the Dharma, due to the teachings, they become a great person. So similarly, the bad person also can become good person. So one must make the efforts to do the such things. So in this way, to rule the whole country, according to the Dharma wise, and then this eighth one is about the wealth. See, the wealth actually the universe is divided into two main parts, what we call the lower realm and higher realms. The lower realm is like hell realm, hungry ghost realm, and animals realm. And higher realm means like human realm, demigods realm, and the gods realm. So in the higher realm has seven qualities. Higher realm has seven qualities. It's like the race, good health, wisdom, power, wealth, and long life, without sickness. So these are the seven qualities of the higher realm. So one of the qualities is the wealth. Wealth, as a worldly life, the wealth is important. But then he said that there are four types of wealth. One type of wealth is like relatives. The relatives helps us. Relatives benefit us. Similarly, the wealth is like relative. The wealth helps us. And such wealth is good wealth. And that how you acquire, for example, due to your previous good karma, that in this life, that you don't need to go so hardships to acquire the wealth. And then after acquiring the wealth, that you use it, you make offerings, you also give to the poor ones, you also use yourself, you also distribute your friends, you also give your relatives. So everybody benefits. So such wealth is like a relative benefit, like a friend. Then there's another kind of wealth that is like enemies. And that is due to the lack of merits, that to acquire the wealth, you need a lot of efforts, a lot of hardships, a lot of difficulties. Then even after acquiring the wealth also, that it becomes everybody fights, even the brothers and sisters also, for the sake of wealth, they become enemies. So it becomes the source of quarrel, source of fighting. And so that is like enemies. The wealth is like an enemy. And then one is like the wealth, actual wealth, and that is just you acquire whatever ways that you acquire, but then also you use it for kind of in general way. And that is just like wealth. Wealth as wealth. And then one is like wasted wealth. That there are some people who make a lot of efforts to acquire the wealth, but then after acquiring the wealth, that you dare not spend for offerings, nor to giving charity works, nor for use for yourself, nor for giving to your relatives. So you just accumulate, just let the bees accumulate the honey. The bees make a lot of efforts to accumulate the honey, and they accumulate so much, and then somebody takes it out. So similarly, such wealth is wasted, so wasted wealth. So there are four kinds of wealth. It is mentioned here. So whatever wealth we acquire, that we must acquire it in a way. And then ninth one is whatever works we do, first we have to examine, discuss it, and then do the work. The people who are fool, they first do the work and then examine later. That is the fool way of doing. The wise way of doing things is first you have to examine, discuss it, and then make the decision, and then do the work. And then even you, of course, all works could not accomplish. Every work could not accomplish. Some works could accomplish, some works could not accomplish. So even you could not accomplish if you have examined before, and if you have discussed and made the decision carefully, then you have no regret of not examining. But if you do the first work and then examine, then later you will regret that first time we should have examined. So these are the kind of general outlines of the 9 subjects that are described in this book about the general and then the second chapter is about the Hinayana teachings, Theravada teachings, because he said that even you live a worldly life in a decent way, according to the Dharma ways that benefits yourself, makes yourself happy, and make others happy, everyone happy, peace, created peace and harmony. But unless you have a religion, you will not accomplish the liberation, or you cannot accomplish your next life's as goals. And so therefore, religion, to practice spiritual practice is very important. And then he describes here important thing is that this root text has actually very vivid, but in the commentary given by Jangwa Ameshap, who was one of the patriarchs of the Sakya order, has a very long commentary. And in this commentary, very interesting thing is because in our traditional Tibetan text has a lot of philosophies about Hinduism, because the Buddhism and the Hinduism were together in India, and then also came to Tibet Buddhism. When the Buddhism was brought from India, of course, we were taught a lot about Hindu philosophies, the different schools of Hinduism, and so on. But there's a very little mention about other religions, such as like Christianity or Islam. But in this commentary, very clearly mentions about Christianity. Of course, the names are slightly different. Sometimes names are slightly different, but basically it mentions very clearly about what it is, the Christianity, and also the Islam. And I think this is very important because many of the Hindu philosophies that we have in our text, I think that no longer exists. Some may exist, but not all of them. But today, the most important religions in the world are Christianity and Islam and so on. So they are very important to know. We need to know them. We need to know what is the Christianity. What is the Christian teachings? And it mentions, there's no lot of details, but at least that it mentions about Christianity. And I think it is one of the few Tibetan texts that mentions about Christianity. And so there are many different religions. And as I said, I myself believe that every religion has their own role to play, to help the mankind. And so therefore, the need of the hour is that every religion we must know, try to get to know each other, and we must share our experience, and we must help each other, so together make a united efforts to make this world a better world. So in any case, of course, then here, out of the many different religions, of course, this mentions about the Buddhism, beginning with the Hinayana religions, because Buddha's main followers, and the majority of the Buddha's followers belongs to the Hinayana teachings, because the majority of the people are inclined to this kind of path. And so in Hinayana religion, of course, as a Buddhist, the very first thing is about the taking refuge. Without taking refuge, you cannot become a Buddhist. Being born in a Buddhist family does not mean that one is a Buddhist. Only when you take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha for the sake of liberation, then one becomes a Buddhist. So therefore, it mentions detail about the taking refuge. Taking refuge is actually the root of all the Dharma and preliminary practice of all the path, and the foundation of all the vows. And it is the thing to differentiate between the Buddhist and non-Buddhist. One have taken the refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, and then one is as a Buddhist. If one is not taking the refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, then one is not a Buddhist. And the refuge, taking refuge in the three Ratna, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, this is very important and very necessary. For example, if one needs to go to an unknown country, the first thing that you require is you need a guide, the guide who can show you the correct path. One needs to rely on the God who can show you the correct path. Similarly, that we take refuge in the Buddha as our guide, because Buddha has shown the path of liberation. And so therefore, we take refuge in the Buddha as our guide. And then, after relying on the God, you have to trouble yourself. By having God alone is not enough. As God shows you, you have to go by yourself. So the Dharma is the path. You have to practice Dharma. Buddha gives the way the Buddha helps the sentient beings is not by performing miracles or by performing the things, but by giving the teachings, what is the right thing, what is the right thing to do, what is the right thing to take, what is the things to discard. And so by following the Buddha's teachings, then we can attain the liberation. So therefore, Dharma is the path. So we take refuge in the Dharma as our actual path. And then we take refuge in the Sangha as our companions. If one takes a journey that is long and difficult, instead of traveling alone yourself, if you have trusted companions, then it is much more helpful. So similarly, that we take refuge in the Dharma, in the Sangha. Sangha means community, the holy community. And so we take as Sangha as our companions, who are heading to the same goal. So we take refuge in the Sangha as our companions. So in this way, that one is all set to the path of liberation. And then also it talks about the Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of truth of cause, the truth of cessation, and the truth of path. First, we must know the suffering. If we don't know the suffering, we can't discard, we can't eliminate the suffering. For example, if you are sick, first we need to know the nature of the sickness. Without knowing the nature of the sickness, you can't take any remedies or any treatments. And so one must know what is the suffering, such as like the suffering, the suffering of change, and the suffering of conditional nature of all phenomena. And then, a second thing is the truth of cause. What is the cause of suffering? We have to discard, we have to abandon the cause of suffering. Otherwise, the suffering will never end. So we have to, for example, when you know the exact nature of the sickness, then you have to abstain from the cause of the sickness. We have to abandon the cause of the sickness. The cause of the sickness is the defilements. And so therefore, we must truth of cause, and then the third is the truth of cessation. What we wish is to recover from your sickness. So similarly, the truth of cessation is where it stops, where it blocks all the sufferings permanently. And to reach that, the fourth truth, which is the truth of path, through this path that you reach the goal, the cessation, where truth is, truth of cessation, where all the sufferings are permanently ceased. So he talks about these things. And then the third one is about Mahayana teachings. Mahayana teachings about Bodhicitta. We believe in rebirth. This is not the only birth that we have now. We had innumerable lives before, and we will also have innumerable lives in the future. This is one of the lives. The life goes on just like the wheel. The wheel turns one round, then it doesn't stop, it turns another round. Similarly, when this life stops, then the next life's wheel turns. It goes on and so on. And so therefore, every sentient being is actually our very dear ones, such as like the father, mother, relatives, and so on. But due to the change of life, we do not recognize each other. And we see some people as our enemies, some people as our friends, some people as indifferent. But in reality, every sentient being, including our most hated enemies, are our very, very dear ones. So we have to realize this. And every sentient being, without any exception, irrespective of ones that are known, ones that are not known, ones that are near, ones that are far, every sentient being is actually our very dear mother and father and so on. So therefore, we have to think about them. We can't abandon them. Even in this life, in the worldly level also, for example, your most loved persons, such as like your parents, your brothers, sisters, your spouse, your children, if they are in a very difficult place with a great suffering, and if yourself in a safe and happy place, if you are a good-hearted person, you wouldn't feel happy. You would rather go where your loved ones are suffering. Similarly, all sentient beings are also our very loved ones, but only due to the change of life that we do not recognize each other. And so, therefore, we have to think about, so how could we pay back their kindness? How could we benefit them? The way to benefit them, every sentient being wish to be free from suffering, and every sentient being wish to accomplish happiness. For the sake of happiness, everyone is running one after another. But due to the lack of wisdom, due to the ignorance, that they are creating more and more causes of suffering and more experience of suffering. So therefore, this has to be corrected. So how can we do that? So we must generate the loving kindness, which means make all sentient beings to happy and to be with the cause of happiness. And when you have this very genuine loving kindness thought, then when we look about around, every sentient being is not happy. Every sentient being is actually suffering. And so wishing every sentient being to be free from suffering is called the compassion. So due to this genuine loving kindness and compassion, then how can we help them? But as at the moment, as we as a ordinary being have no freedom, no choice, because we are totally bound with our karma and defilements. So wherever the winds of karma blows, that one has to be there. We have no choice. So such person cannot rescue sentient beings. Not only that, even the most powerful worldly deities who have great miracles, who have great powers, also cannot rescue sentient beings. Not only that, those who have already reached nirvana, such as the Shavakas and Pratyekabuddhas, also do not have the full ability to rescue all sentient beings. Only the fully enlightened Buddhas who have eliminated all forms of obscurations and who accomplished every possible qualities. So therefore, they even in a single moment can rescue countless sentient beings. So therefore, our goal as Mahayanas, our goal is to accomplish the ultimate enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So the ultimate enlightenment is not for just for oneself alone, but it's for the sake of all sentient beings without any exception. So in this way that we generate the bodhicitta or the enlightenment mind. And in order, after creating such enlightenment mind, then we create the, what we call the entering enlightenment mind, then we create the into entering enlightenment mind, which means that in order to accomplish Buddhahood, that we must follow the Bodhisattva's way of life. The six paramitas, the the perfection of generosity, the perfection of moral conduct, the perfection of patience, the perfection of endeavor, the perfection of meditation, the perfection of wisdom. And the wisdom is very important, because all the other first five paths, five of them are method side, and wisdom is one side. And to make generosity a perfection, it has to be linked with the wisdom. Without wisdom, it is not the perfection of wisdom, but it is the generosity. But with wisdom, then it becomes the perfection of wisdom. So the method and wisdom are just like the two wings. In order to fly in the sky, you need the two wings. So with the two wings that you can fly in the sky. So similarly, with the method and wisdom together, then one can accomplish the enlightenment. So it talks about all this, and also the stages, like the five paths: the path of application, path of accumulation, path of application, the path of seeing, the path of meditation, path of no more learning. The generally speaking, there are two paths: the worldly level path and beyond worldly level path. The worldly level path is the path of accumulation and the path of application. Path of accumulation is where you first accumulate when you become bodhisattva. After taking the bodhisattva vow, after creating the enlightenment mind, that you become a bodhisattva, in the sense that you are ensure to be set to become a Buddha. You are on the line of to becoming the Buddha. So that is the accumulation, and that has, of course, small, medium, and great. And then after that is the path of application, which joins between the worldly path and the beyond worldly path. And then when you reach the path of seeing is the beyond worldly path, where you see the ultimate reality, ultimate truth. So it's called the path of seeing. And then you go through the path of meditation, as there are 10 bhumis. Path of seeing is the first bhumi, and the remaining 9 bhumis are the path of meditation. That increases your wisdom, your seeing, although there's no difference between the path of seeing and the enlightenment of the part that you see. The difference is like the first moon and the full moon. The Buddha is like a full moon, and the path of seeing is like a first moon. But from first moon, then you increase. So the path of meditation is that you increase the moon and to become the full moon. And then the 11th bhumi, so there are 9 bhumis in the path of meditation. And then finally, the path of no more learning is the Buddhahood, which is the 11th bhumi, according to the Mahayana teachings, and that is the no more learning. From there, no one need not learn anymore, so therefore it is called the no more learning. So all this, that you need both method and wisdom. Without the one, one cannot do. For example, in order to walk on the road, you need the legs as well as the eyes. If you have legs, no eyes, you can't see. If you have eyes, no legs, you can't walk. But eyes to see and legs to work together, then you can walk on the road. Similarly, the method and wisdom are like this. Method helps the wisdom, wisdom helps the method. And when method and wisdom together, then one can accomplish the Buddhahood.